Welcome to Unpacking Life's Crazy. I'm Esperanza Phoenix. In this podcast, I share my unusual life experiences, unique perspective, and frank conversations with people like me who use humor to cope with physical disabilities, mental health conditions, and extraordinary life circumstances which set us apart from societal norms. Expect to hear discussions about controversial and adult topics. There will be swearing. Life can be a crazy journey. Let's unpack it together. Welcome back for part two of ADHD in Women. In this episode, I'm going to talk about what the diagnosis process is like and why it is so valuable to get diagnosed even later in life. I'll tell you how treatment is improving my life in some surprising ways, share with you some of the celebrities you've probably heard of who also struggle with ADHD, and the tools and techniques I am using to navigate the pitfalls of this disorder, like time blindness and procrastination. There's a lot left to share with you, so let's unpack this. Before I continue with part two of ADHD in Women, I want to remind my listeners that this is a one-woman show. If you enjoy the podcast, you can contribute by visiting buymeacoffee.com/ESPPhoenix, or you can visit esperanzapaints.com to buy an original piece of artwork, which also supports what I do. Thanks again for listening, and enjoy the rest of the show. I really want to talk about the importance of diagnosis, even as an adult. And that's what I'm learning here in all this research that I've gone down the rabbit hole trying to figure out the symptoms, the mechanisms, the treatment, all of that stuff. What really sent me down this rabbit hole was my eldest daughter. My eldest daughter, Megan, she got diagnosed. And at first, when she first started seeking a diagnosis, they asked the wrong questions. Hopefully, if you feel that this speaks to you and this makes sense to you, and you seek diagnosis, you will research the differences between ADHD in children and ADHD in adults, because it can manifest differently. And sometimes that when you seek a diagnosis, they ask some very basic questions. Some of the most basic questions are, did you graduate from college? Did you do well in school? Have you ever been arrested? Have you ever been fired from a job? And a lot of these are just yes or no questions. And unless they delve into them more, they're not going to get the full picture. So my daughter shared with me that when she first sought a diagnosis and she was asked those questions, they didn't delve in deeper because she actually did well in school. The reason she was able to do that was because she had such a focus on learning. Once she got evaluated by a competent psychiatrist, they asked more questions, and she was able to explain the extreme measures and organization things and tools that she had developed in order to cope with her challenges. And that was the thing. She always did really well in school, which was great. I'm really sure that my second daughter also has ADHD. Now that I've done the research and now that I understand it better, and in particular, I had shared an article about the, you know, extreme sensitivity thing with her, and she's like, oh my gosh, you know, that's so real. But they had different ways of dealing with their symptoms, and my second daughter really was much more like me in the way
she coped in school. In my case, and in her case, it's like, well, if I don't like the teacher, I'm not really going to work at this. If the teacher doesn't like me, then what's the point? If I don't like the subject, I'm not going to work hard at it. If I don't think I can do great at it, I mean, what's the point of wasting my time? So like, I got like A's and D's and F's. If I loved the subject and I liked the teacher, I got A's. If I didn't care, then why try? Because I can't do it perfectly, so I'm just not gonna. But my eldest, you know, she, you know, really wanted to do well. She had more that I'm gonna fit in, I'm gonna conform, and you know, I'm gonna try to make this work. And she did. She was quite successful. She went on to graduate college, and you know, she did great. But I remember when they were getting their grades and they were little, and they'd gotten their report cards back, and my eldest had done really well and got like all A's, maybe one B, and I rewarded her. And then my youngest came back with this dismal report card. I think maybe there was one B on it, but most of it was like D's and stuff. And I remember the teacher had called me in and said, well, they know that this is going to happen and they're going to get punished. And I gave them the ticket saying that. And I said, that doesn't matter. What? The letter grade, this piece of paper you give them, whatever, that doesn't have significance. It's not important. And I understood, because that's how my mind processed the thing. That is not how my eldest processed it. But when they got these report cards, my eldest daughter is like, well, why don't you punish him? Because I get it. The way he copes, the way he thinks, I'm not going to punish him because that's how he is. It's not going to help. It won't change the way that he's dealing with the situation. I know now, because of my diagnosis, that was all ADHD. That's why I reacted the way I did in school. And that's why he reacted that way in school. Sorry. For those of you who don't follow my channel, my second daughter is transgender. So when I talk about the past, it complicates the whole gender thing. Anyways, instinctually, I understood what my youngest was going through at the time, because that's what I had gone through. But what I didn't understand is that my eldest also had ADHD. She just had different coping mechanisms to work around it, which was great for her. But even better, after she got diagnosed and medicated and was able to use the medication to bring down anxiety and those things. So yeah, even if you're not diagnosed as a child and you're not getting treatment as a child, it can make a world of difference. It can make a world of difference. And it's making a huge difference for me right now, because I can go, oh, that's why. Oh, I get it. And when you get it, then you can try to find ways to work around it, because you understand that that is fundamentally why you are reacting this way. And the biggest part is that you are not fundamentally flawed as a human being, because as a child, you're like, you're reacting in this way. You're not able to do the things that the other kids are doing. Even as an adult, you're like, ugh. Why do I always forget this thing? Why can't I do this? Why is what is wrong with me? I am not normal. I'm not normal. You know what? I'm not normal. If you have ADHD, congratulations. You are not normal. And that's okay. Because who wants to be ordinary? You're not normal. Accept it. It's okay. It's okay to be not normal. It is okay to be neurodivergent, which is what ADHD is. Whether you're autistic or you have ADHD or whatever, you are not normal. Congratulations. And the sooner you accept that you are not normal or neurotypical, the sooner you can say, oh, okay, I'm going to stop pretending that I am. I'm going to stop trying to fit into the fucking box that I've never been able to see to begin with, because the box doesn't exist. Time doesn't exist. Yes, you have to find ways to manage things in order to make it to work on time, or in order to manage a schedule or appointments or whatever. You have to find ways to work around some of those challenges. But simply understanding that your brain doesn't work like everybody else's, and that's okay. And if you have a child that you suspect has ADHD, or if you are watching this and you're like, shit, I have ADHD, and you have kids, chances are your child also has ADHD. And maybe it's time to accept and understand they're not normal and get them diagnosed so that you can work with it, so that you can understand it, so that you're no longer criticizing yourself and expecting yourself to fit into the expectations of society that's just not who we are. And that's okay. There are some people who have theorized that ADHD was actually an evolutionary gift. Let me explain that. So if you think about the evolution of humans, we really haven't been on this planet that long, and the Industrial Revolution wasn't that long ago. There was a time when we lived in tribal groups and we had different roles to play within those groups. So imagine for a moment somebody with ADHD. They notice everything. Could be a great hunter. You're going to hear that twig snap. They are going to notice the prey that's running or hiding. They are going to notice when danger is coming because they're hyper-focused on everything going on. They're noticing all the details all at once. And it doesn't matter if they're doing something else. They're going to pop to that noise, to that thing, because we're thinking all the time. Creative thinking, creative problem solving, whether it's trying to build a structure or trying to escape from something, trying to build a trap, all of those things, very useful. And then there's the insomnia part of it, of not sleeping on a regular schedule. Well, somebody had to tend the fire. Somebody had to be able to tend the fire, keep it going, stay awake, and observe what was going on around to make sure that nothing snuck up on the tribe. These were quality things to a tribal society. A lot of our superpowers could have been quite valuable in that setting. They hadn't established a this is how you do things back then. We hadn't had the Industrial Revolution. It's not like you were expected to be at work by 9 and, you know, that schedule wasn't there. You needed somebody who could be on nights, who had these qualities. And then things shifted and things changed and time became a thing. You were expected to do things in a certain way at a certain time, to do those mundane tasks, to be able to punch a clock and work in a factory and put together the same parts over and over and over again, which to me sounds like a freaking nightmare. And I get that maybe some people's minds work that they find that relaxing or something. I don't know. It sounds like hell to me. If that's your job, I'm sorry. I'm sure your brain works in a way that it works for you, and yay for you. But the ADHD brain doesn't work that way. They want to solve problems. If you talk about a problem, we're often going, well, I wonder, maybe if we tried this or that. Our minds work that way. And there was a time in society and tribal life, when those skills were really valuable. And then our society changed. And suddenly this evolutionary gift is considered a disability. And I'm not so sure that it is. So if you're watching this and listening to these things, these symptoms, and saying, oh my God, I think I have ADHD. I'm not normal. Congratulations. Use your out-of-the-box thinking to realize that being not normal is also a gift. As I said, my daughter finally received her diagnosis, and when she got diagnosed, she pretty immediately was like, "Oh, mama, you need to go get diagnosed." And I was like, "Okay," just like it's making a huge difference. And this was before I did all this research that I'm sharing with you now. I was like, "Well, I was diagnosed as a kid, so yeah, all right." So I immediately started that process. But unfortunately, this all took place during the pandemic. And something that has happened during the pandemic is a whole lot of people realizing that either they have ADHD or their children do. And this is for a couple of reasons. For the children, I'm sorry, but there's a lot of parents out there that were in denial, that were like, "The teacher just isn't good," and blah, blah, blah. They didn't realize because they didn't have to try to teach their own children. And so during the pandemic, with the Zoom things and having to teach their own children, they realized that what their teachers might have been saying, or maybe not noticing because they had large class sizes, is like, "Oh, wow, okay." And they realized, maybe my child has ADHD. So then they started seeking diagnosis for their children. Additionally, because of the pandemic, a lot of people were working from home and trapped in homes with their spouses or significant others. And then they started realizing these problems that maybe because of work schedules and stuff weren't noticeable. And then suddenly they realized that without the schedule, time doesn't exist for their partner. And they're like, "What the?" And maybe these ADHD traits, they finally started noticing. So a lot of people started seeking diagnosis. So because of that, I explained in my previous episodes, there was a huge backlist. There was like, well, first, a lot of the diagnostic tools that a psychiatrist uses have to be done in person. And obviously, people weren't having those appointments. It's like, okay, it's not a medical necessity, so they weren't scheduling. And so then once they started scheduling, there was this huge wait list. And when I got put on the wait list, I was told, you know, the wait list is pretty long, but we'll put you on the list. And then I further realized that the psychiatrist who was doing the evaluations was only there 3 days a week. And then in order to get diagnosed, I don't know if it's the same as a child. I assume it is. Maybe it's not. I don't have that information. But it was 6 appointments in order to get diagnosed. And the diagnostic process was really exhausting. I'll come back to that. So I was on the wait list for more than a year, and I would get a call each month saying, "Do you still want to be on the wait list?" Yes, I still want to be on the wait list. Just keep me on the freaking wait list. In addition to that, I was seeing a therapist for EMDR, and that's with my PTSD, and I discussed that in other episodes. She was also the person in charge. So after my boyfriend got the job here in Oregon, I still hadn't been evaluated. And I was like, I have been on this wait list for over a year. And now I'm afraid that I am going to move and have to be put on another wait list. And then how long is it going to take for me to get evaluated and possibly medicated? And so I suspect she moved me up the list a little bit, because basically we were moving in mid-January, and they started my evaluation process a little into December, I guess. And like I said, there were 6 appointments. So the evaluation for ADHD, it started with a phone thing where she asked me a series of questions. And as I mentioned, some of those questions included, how did you do in school? Have you graduated from college? Have you ever been fired from a job? Have you ever been arrested? There were questions like that. Well, here's the thing. She was really good about asking follow-up questions, and I was really good about oversharing because that's my style. So one of the questions was, have you ever been fired from a job? And I said, no, but I've had I have to look at the list again. I had 39 different jobs. And then the reactive sensitivity disorder or portion of it would kick in, that if I felt criticized, if I felt like I was going to be fired, if I felt like I wasn't living up to standards, I would quit and get another job. So, you know, and oftentimes there was that attention to detail or not being able to remember multiple directions, which would affect my job performance. So then I would get a talking to by a supervisor and then I would panic. And so, yeah, so that was part of it. So yeah, there were questions like that. No, I haven't ever been arrested. I have pretty good control over my impulse thing. And then there's the whole empathy thing where I wouldn't want to do anything that would hurt somebody else. I've never had a DUI because, for one thing, I'm terrified that, what if I killed somebody? What if I hurt somebody? I don't think I could live with that. I think I'd just die. I just could not handle those consequences. There's no way. So some of those things were kind of saving graces in my life, I'm sure. So she asked me all these questions and said, okay, that sounds pretty on point. And then I had to go in for multiple in-office visits. And the in-office visits included things like them telling you a list of words and then having you remember them. Plus they did sort of a cognitive intelligence test where they give you a word and then ask you what you associated with it, or they give you more and more complicated words and have you give a definition. One of them was they give you three words that aren't necessarily related, but how could you relate these words together? And then there were having to circle. There was one that I remember where there were a list of words that were printed in different colors. Red, green, blue, but then the words were red, green, blue, but didn't associate with the colors. And then you were supposed to circle all the words that were a certain color. That to me was really easy. It was looking at colors. And then there was another one where you're circling certain numbers in an order. It's really weird, some of these things, but your processing speed and accuracy and stuff are one of the things that they use to determine this. And one of the first things I did when she gave me these rows of words and stuff is can I have another piece of paper? Because one of my other learning disabilities is Erlene syndrome or scotopic sensitivity syndrome. And I'm only able to focus on a small section of letters at a time, and everything else is kind of hard to focus on. And so it's easy for me to lose my place. And so I will use, if it's information like that, I will use another piece of paper and move it down the line so I can keep track of things. And that was a coping mechanism that I learned a long time ago. Yeah, sure. So another weird one was these puzzle blocks that they would show you a picture and then they would tell you to organize the blocks in that pattern. So there's this series of weird tests that you go through, and it required a couple of different meetings to go through all of this stuff. And then there was a final meeting to go over the details and the diagnosis. And in short, yeah, I absolutely have ADHD. It was pretty clear pretty early on. But one of the comments that she made is that my accuracy was really good, but my speed was really slow because clearly I was more focused on accuracy than I was on speed. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. Because of fear of making a mistake, the perfectionism. I will get it right if it takes me all damn day. I will get it right. So that is kind of how the process works to diagnose it. And because I have ADHD, I don't know how all those things work for a neurotypical person, how their reactions to those things in the test and all of that. But yeah, I got my diagnosis. But as I explained in a previous episode, I got my diagnosis 3 days before we moved. And that didn't allow for time to, because the person doing the testing was not a prescribing psychiatrist. I'm not sure what her specific degree is. But anyways, she's not allowed to prescribe medication. So basically, you take this diagnosis and then you go to a prescribing psychiatrist. And I wasn't able to do that. And then we moved without having time to get a prescription. And then I had to reestablish medical care in a different state. And that took a while. Like, I wasn't able to get my first appointment for anything until April. And then after I finally scheduled with a GP, then I also had to schedule with a prescribing psychiatrist. And I talked about it in a previous podcast. It was a telehealth appointment and she flaked and like didn't show up. That was like waiting and like calling in to make sure that I hadn't screwed something up, because that's another thing. We assume that we're the ones that got things wrong. And so I was like, where, what the heck? And just like missed the appointment entirely. So then I had to reschedule. And I was like, no, this is not acceptable. Do not schedule me with the same person. That is not okay. And so they scheduled me with a different person. So since then, I met with my new psychiatrist, and she was really helpful. She of course, had my results, but she also, you know, asked me questions and went over some stuff. And she also has ADHD. And so she gets it. Like, she really, really gets it, which was awesome. And then we discussed medication. And I want to delve into the medication because there is a lot of judgment about people taking stimulant medication because of assumptions based on neurotypical brains. And yes, ADHD meds, uppers, can and are abused by people who want a high. They want to have that energy. They think it's going to help them stay up all night for a test or whatever. It is a drug that some people take to abuse. That is true. But for those of you who don't know, I mentioned before, ADHD brains react in a totally different way to stimulant medications. Our brains don't react that way. So she basically asked me what medication I thought I might want to try. And I said, I would like to try Adderall. And the reason why is because my eldest daughter, that is what she was prescribed. And similar chemistry. It's logical that I might react well to that medication. And frankly, because of my previous diagnosis and all of that, I had been treated as a guinea pig for, you know, multiple psychiatric meds over the years. And it's quite frustrating. They try you on something, maybe it works a little bit, maybe it doesn't. And then you try the next thing and it's got side effects and blah, blah, blah. So I said, I think I'd like to give this a try. And she said, yeah, that makes sense. For the same reason, you know, similar biology. It makes sense. So let's try you on that. So the way it was prescribed to me is prescribed in a starting dose, and then you kind of build up the dose a little bit. So for the first week, I was prescribed 5 milligrams twice a day, first thing in the morning, and then again a dose in the afternoon. And then the following week, 10 in the morning, and then 5 in the afternoon, because of the fear that perhaps stimulants might affect your sleep. And insomnia has been an issue for me my whole life, which I'm learning now may be ADHD related as well as other issues. So I get this prescription. I get off the phone with her. She calls it to my pharmacy. I'm like, cool. I go pick it up and I come home and I take my first dose. And the best way to describe it is 30 minutes later, it was sort of like being in a house where there's a fans going, you know, and the TV is running, and somebody in the back room is playing video games, and there's somebody talking loudly, and the power goes out, and suddenly you can hear the birds chirping. It was this eerie quiet, this eerie calm in my head, and I was like, what the fuck? Holy crap. It was like, for a moment, when it first happened, it was like disconcerting. It was like a deafening silence. And I was like, whoa. So much so that I picked up the phone and I called my daughter and I was like, okay, I just took my first dose and whoa. Is this what it's like? Whoa. And she said, yeah. Yeah, it's like, it was really freaking weird. Now, for any neurotypical people listening, you might find this description bizarre. I guess that's how your brains work? Is that how it works? Is that how a normal brain feels? Where you don't have this buzz of multiple thoughts vying for your attention? This was the first time. Well, okay, there's been a couple times when I was really, really stoned where there was that, but there wasn't any clarity there. It was just like, whoa. But it wasn't like that. It was like just calm and also sort of a peacefulness that I had not experienced before. And the following week, I went for a walk with my little dog, and I've been taking this walk fairly regularly since we moved here. It's a nice walk through nature, and I love nature. I generally find it calming to some degree. But here I was on the medication, and I was taking a walk, and I was like, wow, life is good. Life is good. I feel at peace. I just felt calm. I'm walking along. I'm not worried about the traffic coming by. I'm not feeling anxious about the fact there's construction going on all around us right now, which I'm going to have to edit out this hum of this big equipment that's making all kinds of noise. And I wasn't feeling distracted by the construction noise. I was noticing the birds, but it wasn't like I was worried about those people walking over there or all these other things that normally would have me a little bit on edge. Not like panicked or whatever, but I'm aware of them and I'm like, okay, am I going to have to react? I'm going to have to. That multi-directional anxiety about everything going on around me wasn't there. And it was freaking amazing. It was just amazing. And just a sense of calm and peacefulness because apparently my brain now has those happy chemicals that it was lacking. And so the focus is more there. It hasn't changed my creativity or my enthusiasm or any of that. And I haven't like magically become super focused. But I am recording this podcast on the 26th instead of the 29th. So yay me. Even though it's not now. So that's exciting. And then a really cool and amazing thing happened. I have been sleeping better. Like, a lot better. I track everything. I'm kind of obsessive about trying to keep track of my sleep. I have an Apple Watch so that I can try to track my sleep pattern. And part of this is just because the insomnia, trying to figure all that out. And I take multiple supplements to help me sleep. I did a whole episode on sleep. I've added a few supplements since then. So feel free to ask in the comments if you want me to list them because they are helpful. But it kind of a hit or miss whether I get a good night's sleep. I'm tracking like my REM cycle and my deep sleep and how am I doing and how efficient is it? Because it's like, oh yeah, sometimes I will get 7.5 hours sleep, but I'm in bed for 9 hours in order to get that much sleep. So that's really frustrating. And then it's like, do I get up for a few hours and go back to bed? It's a significant problem. But since I've started the medication, I have had more and more surprising nights of good sleep, more and more like 95% efficiency in my sleep. And oh my gosh, I got an hour of deep sleep and nearly 2 hours of REM. And a couple times like excessively amazing. Like there have been several times where I slept for 9 hours. 9 hours! That is freaking unheard of. I think the only other time I slept 9 hours is when I accidentally ate too many of the edible brownies and licked the bowl when I was high for 24 hours. Like, so amazing. It's been amazing. And part of the reason I am sharing that with you is because if you are one of those people who is really negative about medications, or you're like, oh, I don't want my kid on stimulants. Oh my God. I want to be really clear with you that for people who actually have ADHD, that isn't what the medication does to our brain. That is not how we react to it. It's not that at all. It's not going to make you more hyperactive. It's not necessarily going to prevent you from sleeping. There are some people who actually take their ADHD medication at night because the same way it does during the day, it quiets the brain. And so you're not having those racing thoughts and you're able to sleep. I did try it at night once, and I struggled to sleep that night, so I don't know if it was a fluke. I may eventually give it a try again to see, because it does calm me during the day so much. But yeah, it's been pretty significant and a pretty spectacular change. And I finally finished the painting. I'm so excited I finally finished it. So I'm hoping that if I keep taking the medication, it will help me to stay on track, to get more done, and hopefully reach my goal of doing at least 2 of these podcasts every month. And the other thing I really want to do is break these episodes up for my YouTube channel into smaller doses focused on individual things. Because oftentimes I cover several topics, or in this case, several aspects of ADHD, and I think it might be helpful for people to be able to access them in little chunks instead, but I haven't been able to motivate myself to do that because it's kind of a not now thing, where the podcast is kind of a now thing. So I'm hopeful that I can do that. Before I share with you the tools that are helping me to manage some of my ADHD symptoms, I want to share with you a list of celebrities who also have ADHD. Just for you who have ADHD to understand that you're amongst a group of pretty awesome, not normal people. I already mentioned Robin Williams, who is one of my favorite all-time actors and comedians. And you will find that several people on the list are actors. I have a theory that that's because of the coping mechanism of masking. So, slight deviation. Masking. Those of us who are neurodivergent, trying to pretend to be normal, putting on a happy face, having to act like we understand what's going on when we really don't, because we've lost track of the conversation or whatever it is. I also do some acting, and you can find some of my acting videos on my YouTube channel. And I think a lot of actors get that way because it was a survival skill of acting normal when you're not normal. So, famous people or celebrities that have ADHD, and you know, there are a lot more, and I left a bunch of them off the list, and I also tried to focus a lot more on women. Emma Watson. Emma Watson, Hermione from Harry Potter, ADHD. Now, this one was interesting to me. Daniel Kwan, the director of Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I really hadn't done much looking into it, but it's kind of about ADHD. And the director didn't even realize until he started working on the projects, like, oh my gosh, wow, surprise. Trevor Noah has ADHD. Lisa Lang, the journalist, and she was diagnosed at age 40. So she was, I'm sure, developing some crazy coping skills to get where she was before she even realized. Scott Kelly, astronaut and senator of Arizona. Now, I am not familiar with this particular actress, but Bex Taylor Kloss, she's the actress in the shows Arrow the Killing and House of Lies, Melanie Brown, or Mel B, of the Spice Girls, and Erin Brockovich. And that was interesting to me. Apparently, she also struggled with dyslexia, so she overcame both of those things to go on to do amazing things and have a movie made about her, so that's pretty cool. And here are a few who likely had ADHD, but there's really no way to confirm, and that is Leonardo da Vinci. And if you've seen his designs and the variety of different things he did, that kind of makes sense. Walt Disney, again, many different directions, very creative, and Joan Rivers. So that's interesting. So as promised, I'm going to share some of the tools that I am using to try to manage my symptoms. And these are things that I started using once I started realizing that, oh yeah, I do still have ADHD, but before I was diagnosed, I started looking into tools to try to kind of rein things in. There are several apps. I don't use the apps to keep track of schedules and stuff. And if apps work for you, that might be a way to go, and you can look into some of those. For me, the physical act of writing something down and seeing it on paper helps me cement it in my mind better because I'm extremely visual. That is one of the symptoms that they ask about. Do you misplace things frequently and lose track of things? And when she asked that, I said, well, I don't really, because if I set things down and I think about it when I do, it's like I take a little mental snapshot. I'm very visual. And then when I go to find it again, I go, oh yeah, that's where I last saw it. I put it there. So I'm a very visual person. So the way I keep track of habits and things is a Clever Fox planner. Now, they don't sponsor me or anything. I'm not getting any money from you purchasing a Clever Fox. But if you want to sponsor me, Clever Fox, please do. That would be awesome. But this just is the one that I use, and I'm sure there are others out there. But the reason I like it is because at the beginning it has, and some of it I don't always fill out. You have a vision board at the beginning. You can set personal goals, and it's only each planner is only 6 months because it comprises of a lot of information. So then at the beginning of it, you have a calendar where you can just kind of keep track of things. But in the calendar, it also has your month's goals. And then at the end of the month, you have your wins. What did you do? Did it work? How did it go? How will you improve next time? You have some plans alongside that you can set plans in each thing. Like, what habits are you going to pursue? What skills? What things are you going to avoid? For me, it's like social media or the news if it's causing me to feel negative, whatever. And then it also has these really great ribbons that you can put on certain pages so you can easily get back to them. Then you are writing it out yourself. So you can put whatever goals you want, and you enter in the dates yourself too. So, for example, I wrote down the things that I wanted to do. And it has sections. So you've got your week's priorities. So my priority for this week was to record this podcast. I'm not going to get to editing it this week because we have plans over the weekend. But the priorities were finish my painting. Oh, look, I got to check it off because I finished my painting. Yay me. And then I have a work to-do list. And in my case, because I am disabled, my work to-do list includes the things that I do for both myself and my boyfriend. So things like taking out the compost and planting things in the garden and those kinds of things. And then there's a personal to-do list. On there I have finish ADHD notes. Yay, that was for this podcast. What else do I have on there? Oh, fold and put away clothes because that's my laundry. I got to do it. And then it also has a checklist of habits. So things that you want to try to do every day. So on there I've got AM light because I need to get my light in the morning for my vitamin D and blah, blah, blah. It's not as much a deal now because it's finally sunny out. Meditation. Meditation is another tool to help you with your ADHD. Hopefully I'll come back to that. So you got the checklist, and then you try to make sure that you check off your thing each day. Now, that's for forming habits. And as I said, it can be hard to form habits because of the now, not now thing. Like watering the garden, that's on my list of habits that I'm trying to do. There was a time when taking my little dog Snacks out for his afternoon potty was on this list because I would get distracted with my artwork and I would forget. So that is your weekly plan. And then each day you break it down again. You have today's main goal, and then you have today's top priorities, which is three, and then a to-do list at the bottom. And then at the very bottom of the page, you get to rate your productivity. And honestly, I haven't really been tracking that. I don't really grade myself on those things. Maybe one day I will, but I haven't. So it helps you keep track of these things. And then each day, you kind of check off what's on your list, and then you can check. It's like, okay, am I staying on track? Am I getting these habits done? Am I remembering my appointments? All that stuff. Clever Fox Planner. And additionally, colored pens, because I like to keep track of like my daily habits in a color. And, exercise is green, whatever. And another weird thing is a mechanical pencil. And I know this is partly because of my trauma with school, because I did so poorly because of the ADHD and the learning disabilities, and perfectionism, because because I like to be able to erase it and rewrite it if I do it wrong. And it's stupid stuff. Like if I misspell something, it doesn't matter. I am not being graded, but I will still erase it and write it correctly. So I have to have a mechanical pencil. It's a quirk. Okay, so that's the planner. And then there are multiple timers. And this timer is pretty basic. You know, I like it because it's cute. It's actually a birthday gift. And so for tea or something like that where I need to be jerked awake. Ah, he's making noises. Sorry. I've got that. But of course, I use the timer on my watch. I use the timer on my phone. I have a medication timer now that I'm taking the ADHD meds that reminds me to take my afternoon dose. My morning dose I basically take whenever it is I wake up because that's kind of random. So timers. I set reminders to, for appointments and things like that, obviously, like my phone. But another thing that I've been finding that I have to do is certainly with medication or whatever, is when the timer on my watch goes off, I don't turn that timer off until I have physically gotten up and done the thing that it's telling me to do. Because I will inevitably say, oh yeah, I know, and I'll turn it off, and bam, something distracts me, and I completely forget. Completely. Like, yeah, it went off a minute and a half ago, and I didn't do the thing, and then I don't have my reminder anymore. So sometimes, physically getting up and doing the thing that the timer is for before the thing stops. Okay, so this water bottle is a Bluetooth water bottle, and it flashes on the bottom. It is called the Hydrate Spark. It is kind of expensive, but I was kind of chronically dehydrated because I would forget to drink. And since it's a Bluetooth thing, it like sends you a text reminder if you haven't drunk in a while. You can set the flash warning to only flash when you're behind on your drinking goals, or you can have it like flash to reward you when you drink and whatever. So that is a reminder for me to hydrate. And because it ties to an app in the phone, you can enter in, like if I drink a glass of water at the restaurant or something like that, you can enter in the other fluids that you drink into the app. And since I started using this, I think I have been properly hydrated now. I'm on a record. I think it's been something like 37 days. 37 days I have been properly hydrated, which is huge for me because, like I said, I forget to drink. Or I would forget to drink until late in the evening and be like, oh yeah, I'm behind. I should drink some water. And then I'm up all night having to pee. So that's not cool. So very useful. Yes, it's expensive. It's unfortunate. But It has been a valuable tool. This alarm is not just an alarm. Let me see if I can get it to go off. It's going to be a moment. Okay, so this alarm, it doesn't make a sound. It actually flashes. So when it goes off, there's a flashing light. And this is a start-stop for me. Up to an hour. And I use it for two purposes. So one is to make me start something that is mundane. So there might be a thing that needs to be done that's boring or annoying or whatever. Well, see, there it goes. It's flashing. Flash, flash, flash. So let's say I really need to tidy the living room. I don't feel like doing it. So I set this thing for 15 minutes. I will tidy for 15 minutes, and when it flashes, I can be done. Oftentimes, once I get started, then I can finish the task. But it's that initiating and starting the task that is really freaking hard to do. And that is a fairly typical ADHD brain thing because it's not, there's not a huge reward in it. It's not exciting. So it's hard to get started. So not only do I use this for the start thing, but I also use it for the stop thing because of the hyperfocus. For example, working on that painting back there. Once I get started on something like that, like I said, I can forget to get up and eat. I can forget to use the bathroom. I can forget to stand up and stretch my legs. And since I do have fibromyalgia, if I sit for a long time without moving or doing anything, when I do get up, it can be quite painful and I can be stiff. And if I overdo it, I can trigger a flare-up and then be out of commission for days. So getting up and moving at various times is important. But I also have a really strong startle response, so I don't like alarms. They, like I said, this little guy is for like tea timing and things like that, where it's okay if I have a little start. But if I am like sucked into a project and an alarm goes, I'm like, ah! I don't need that. So I will put this in somewhere in my range of vision. And when it flashes, it's like, oh, it's time to get up and stretch my legs or let the dog out or do something. And so, yeah, start, stop thing. Very useful. Okay, so this one is just fun. Because of the time blind thing and not having a proper observation of time, I put this on my wish list. It's not an hourglass, it's a half hourglass. And my eldest daughter got me this for Mother's Day. And my purpose is, like, when I am working on my journal in the morning or whatever, I can lose track of time. And I want to be able to observe the passage of time in a visual way that actually means something to me and has significance to me. Because, like I said, time is incredibly abstract. But watching the sand sift through the hourglass and being able to look up and go, oh, I guess a while has passed, because it's hard to grasp that. That's another fun tool that I just got for Mother's Day, so I've been enjoying that as well. Before I end this episode, I'd like to share some resources with you. And I mentioned a moment ago, I think that meditation is a good tool. Now, if you have ADHD and you hear the word meditation, you probably go, oh, I can't even. Oh, I've tried meditating. It doesn't work. I just sit there and think about stuff. And I get you. I hear you. I know exactly what you mean. But I have been working really hard to practice meditation because the more you practice something, the better you get at it. And the whole point is that you're trying to quiet your mind. And the more you practice that, the better you can quiet it when you're having racing thoughts at night and things like that too. So I've been using the Calm app. Again, there are other apps and they don't sponsor me or anything, so there's no particular reason why it has to be Calm. However, the Calm app, I know because that's the one that I use, it has a series of meditations that are specifically for ADHD, and they are offered by a meditation instructor who happens to have ADHD, and his name is Jeff Warren. So if you have the Calm app or you look into the Calm app, look up Jeff Warren ADHD series, because it's nice to have somebody trying to instruct you on meditation who really gets how difficult it is to quiet the ADHD mind. And also he offers meditations that aren't just like, sit here quietly, do not move, ignore the itching, do not fidget. In fact, some of them is like, go ahead and fidget. You know, use this meditation while you're walking or whatever. So, excellent tool and resource. And I will put a link in the description. All right, the next one is Attitude Magazine. It's available online. And it is a magazine directed solely for people who have ADHD. and it's for parents of ADHD children and also has many valuable articles for adults. And because it is an online magazine, you can go to their website, and it's spelled Attitude, ADDITUDE.com. And I will put a link to that as well. So it's a valuable resource, and you can also just like search it. For example, ADHD in women, how it differs. Lots of really valuable information with Attitude Magazine. And the final resource is actually another podcaster. She is actually listed on the ADHD celebrities because she has a very popular YouTube channel, which is called How to ADHD. And her name is Jessica McCabe, and I just discovered her recently. She has fairly short videos, but she covers a lot of the basics of ADHD, like how to explain it, what is it, coping things, and also just some videos that are really cathartic for somebody who has it to kind of commiserate about things. I watched one recently about her frustration in getting her medications during the pandemic and after the pandemic. And my eldest daughter has been having this problem as well, which is, I guess there was a problem in the supply chain, and then more people getting diagnosed with ADHD. There's been kind of a medication shortage. So depending on the dosage you take and the brand you take and how your insurance covers it and your pharmacy and all of that stuff, a lot of people have been having difficulty getting their medication. So she has a whole episode about how frustrated she was trying to get her medicine. And I feel for her. I hope I don't at some point face similar difficulties, because it is really helping me. So, covered a whole lot, but I'm also going to leave in some of my ADHD moments just for you, because, as I mentioned, masking, where we try to pretend to be normal, it's also, I guess, important for us to accept that we aren't and let the world see the reality of it. At least sometimes. Yeah, I'm still going to edit the fuck out of most of my episodes, but I'll leave some of this shit in there. Hopefully, it will become a now moment, and I will also break this up into smaller episodes of specific topics. Anyways, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Unpacking Life's Crazy. I hope you learned some stuff. I hope you got some information that might help yourself or others. Or at the very least, I hope you have a better understanding of neurodivergent people. And maybe you'll develop a little more empathy and acceptance of how our brains work. Until next time, take care of yourself and the ones you love.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your support by giving the podcast a 5-star rating. And if you can spare the time, write a review. This helps put the podcast in front of more listeners. This is a one-woman show, so sometimes it takes me a little while to get everything done. Clips of this episode and the full episode will soon be available on my YouTube channel. Look me up under Esperanza Phoenix or Unpacking Life's Crazy.